You are listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network.
And the Sports Podcasting Network.
And welcome to Soccer Today. I'm Dwayne Rollins along with Kevin Lermay. Kevin, how are you doing?
I am doing great, Dwayne. We've been a little delayed today. We're figuring out how to do everything, but it's been still a great week. A lot of great upgrades here on the Sports Podcasting Network. And I have to say, I'm quite excited to announce that starting today, What's the Score Sports Quiz is joining the show. And to talk about it today as well, most of all to talk about the NWSL, we'd like to welcome Baxter Colbin. Baxter, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Baxter, you, as Kevin said, we're going to talk to you about the NWSL, but first off, tell us a little bit about this show that you're going to launch on the ESPN network today.
Absolutely, yeah. What's the Score is a weekly sports news quiz show that I came up with a couple months ago, and was able to put together a great team of people together to help me do it. So basically, all it is just an hour show long that we do once a week that allows folks to get a different and a unique perspective on some of the maybe more interesting and unique things you may not have heard about. That's great that you know that Nyquist, you know, won the Kentucky Derby, but did you know that, you know, England now has lawnmower racing and, you know, things like that. So we get to mess around and have a good time with it, but it gives people an opportunity to really just have fun with sports and not always hear the same talking heads going after it about, you know, Deflategate or something like that on ESPN.
Fair enough. And Kevin, for the record, I just want to make it clear that I am not hosting a podcast on lawnmower racing, okay?
Why, Dwayne? Why? I'm sure you would love it. It's all your favorite loves, lawn, mowing, you would love it.
Actually, I enjoy mowing. I enjoy
mowing. Fantasy lawnmowing networks are so much fun. Trust me, you're really missing out, guys. I'd recommend it.
I put everything on John Deere. Just John Deere.
There you go. Yeah, and I bet you that I would get to personally know the three listeners that show would have. All right, Brandon Baxter, let's go to – I almost called you Brandon because there's a hockey player with that name, but you probably know that. Anyway, Baxter, I want to go on to the NWSL. And just in general, a lot of our listeners want just to follow women's soccer. They follow women's soccer on the international level, but they don't necessarily have the same access to the NWSL, the same access to the club game. So can you just give us a bit of an overview for someone who's kind of an informed outsider? Well, where is that league going right now, and what are some of the storylines to watch early on in that season?
Absolutely, yeah. The NWSL is very unique in the aspect of it's the best women's professional soccer league in the world. It's entering year number four, so you think about that. You're like, well, year number four, what's going on with that? Well, it hasn't been the players' fault. The folks that have been behind the scenes trying to run the last couple of professional women's leagues have not always been the kindest people. But the last 4 years, MLS and NWSL have gotten together and said, hey, we want to give the best women in the world an opportunity to play at the highest level. So they have brought in these different partnerships between MLS and now this NWSL league as well to bring 10 teams into the league to really promote women's soccer, not only in America, but across the world as well. And you look at the folks that are in here to try to, you know, draw cross comparisons. If you were to put, you know, a Thomas Muller, a Lionel Messi, a Cristiano Ronaldo, and let them all play, it's basically the Champions League, to try to use big comparisons in women's soccer, all playing in one league here in America, because you have the best women's American players. You have the best Canadian, the best Mexican, Spanish, British, Australian, German, even at times, too, playing here in the same league, which doesn't happen. You know, everyone tries to cross compare a little bit across. You're like, well, what does that mean for the men? Well, it's basically like taking the Champions League and making them play all year long, basically. So just to give folks a little bit of a cross comparison. But the NWSL this season has been a lot of fun to watch. A couple of surprise teams. The Orlando Pride are the newest expansion team to the league. They brought the league to 10 teams. They're also a partner of Orlando City SC, which is an MLS team that joined the league last year. And they're currently doing pretty well so far this year. I mean, they're 2-2 on the year. But the big storylines I feel this year that folks need to follow so far is that the two-time defending champions, FC Kansas City, have yet to win a game this year. They're 0-3-1 on the season. Nothing is really clicking for them. They are missing a couple of their star players, though. Amy Rodriguez and Sydney Leroux are both out because they're pregnant. So you can't necessarily blame them for that. But at the same time, you're still missing two elite strikers as well for a club like FC Kansas City. But overall, though, I mean, the league is really starting to come into its own. There's clubs all over the country. I mean, whether you're in the Pacific Northwest, I mean, out east has a ton of clubs as well. The Midwest, where I'm from, doesn't have that many, unfortunately. I mean, you've got Kansas City and Chicago, but it's a really exciting, it's a really engaging league, and it's really helping to grow the overall product of women's soccer in America for, you know, current people playing, but a lot of young girls as well, that next generation of U.S. women's international ladies as well.
I want to turn to one particular team that's fascinating me this year. They did launch this year, the Orlando Pride, big crowds, a lot of excitement. Is it fair to suggest that the way that Orlando is approaching this might mean that club in the near future might be a club that could be one of the dominant forces in this league?
You certainly would like to think so. They have the right framework for it. They brought in Tom Sermani, the former U.S. Women's National Team head coach. They've got one of the most recognized ladies in women's soccer right now in Alex Morgan. You mix that in with a couple other folks that they have on the team as well, Ashton Harris and Caitlin Kyle. They've got the name to be good, but I also think because they have partnered with a new and budding organization like Orlando City as a whole, I think that moving forward is really going to help them a lot. If you want to really break it down for the personnel, no, they're still missing a couple of key spots, especially on the defensive side of things, but they're on their way to be a very good club. I mean, for an expansion club, I mean, they've played four games, they're, you know, sitting in fifth place right now. So that's not horrible, but they still have a couple of personnel things that they need to add a little bit more depth to. But overall, though, I think this club could be a very dominant powerhouse going forward.
Max, you mentioned the Champions League in Europe as well for the women's side. It's a game that's growing a lot on the European side of the pond. Is there a competition in – I know that the calendar is actually not necessarily competing with each other. A lot of players are going to play both, missing a couple of games in both seasons. But is there a competition to maybe raise the level in WSL where it would be a suitable year-long option for those players?
A lot of the players do, actually. The FA Women's League in England actually plays with the Econ, so a lot of the – it is kind of a choose which one you want to prefer. A lot of the English women's national team players do opt to play in England. Makes the most sense, honestly. I mean, they're all right there, and those teams are also partnered with clubs like Arsenal and Chelsea and Manchester City. Not necessarily the same level of promotion, but folks really enjoy that. But for the ladies that want to play, like you mentioned, all year long, basically a lot of them go to the W League in Australia, and a lot of them will maybe miss the first week or two of NWSL preseason, basically, because that season will have just be finished up, depending on how far they go. But a lot of folks will go on loan from NWSL programs over to Australian teams, and they love playing there. A lot of it's similar weather conditions as well, depending on, I guess, where you're playing. But it keeps them informed, and it's almost like an unspoken partnership almost between the two leagues as well, because a lot of players will transition there and then come back for the NWSL season.
Now, it's Soccer Today, Baxter, so we kind of need your, not necessarily your hot take, but maybe a little hot takery. What's the future of the Women's National Team program with Abby Wambach's recent history of not doing necessarily so well off the field now, being retired? It's a transition portion with Alex Morgan bringing the younger crop. What's the future for the Women's National Team and for the program itself heading into Rio and heading into the next cycle after?
Well, the women's national team is interesting in the sense that you lose a player like Abby Wambach, you lose a player to injury like Megan Rapinoe. Most any other country, any other team, I mean, you talk about even from just an American football perspective, you lose Tom Brady, you lose Aaron Rodgers or LeBron James for those basketball folks out there. And all of a sudden you're like, well, what are we supposed to do? Our best player's gone. Well, that's not the case with the women's national team. They have one of the deepest rosters I have ever seen in any sport. You talk about, you know, exciting and really talented ladies coming through that are not even 25 years old yet. You've got ladies like Morgan Bryan, Tobin Heath, Crystal Dunn, Julie Johnson, Allie Krieger, Allie Long. I mean, you really can go down the list. But ladies like Alex Morgan and Kristen Press have really stepped up and said, hey, I want to be the catalyst of this attack right now. I know that Megan and Abby were true, you know, number 9, number 10 for this team, but you also have ladies like Carly Lloyd on the team as well. The U.S. Women's National Team as a whole is one team I'm really not worried about in the terms of, you know, will they decline? Will they not produce? No, this player pool, this team as a whole is incredibly talented, and I would be shocked if this women's national team is not at least on the medal podium, if not in the championship game when it comes to Rio.
Fair enough, and obviously the Olympics have always been the U.S.'s domain in that area.
Yeah.
They're massively successful there. Although we're up in Canada, we have a little bit of concern about the semifinals and how that played out there in London. But we'll leave that well enough for alone. But I do want to talk about the Canadians in relation to the NWSL. We have seen that the Mexicans kind of drop off with the allocation spots, not happy with the usage of the players. The Canadians aren't completely filling their spots either. What is your take on the international allocation spots in the NWSL, and where do you think the future of that is moving forward? Do you anticipate that the Canada will continue on with that maybe they might bring some other countries in?
I think so. It makes the most sense, obviously, that Canada, the United States, and Mexico are all kind of a part of the system right now, because the league is in North America, and those are the three major countries that make up North America. But Canada needs to be, anybody that follows Canadian soccer needs to be excited, though, because this team still is very talented, and being able to see those players stay in North America and continue to make those teams better. I mean, you talk about ladies like Diana Matheson, Adrienne Leone, Canada has a lot of really talented and exciting players, even Caitlin Kyle as well. But, if they stay in America and stay in the NWSL, it's only going to make the league better as a whole. No offense to the Mexican national teams. They haven't really produced a lot of high-quality players in a long time. So if it really does kind of come down to U.S. and Canada supplying a lot of these allocation spots, that probably makes the most sense overall in terms of high quality of play. I would like to see more players, though, from either South America, or maybe if other teams and countries would like to send players over from Europe. But Europe, as we all know from a soccer world perspective, likes to do their own thing, and they can do the best of whatever they're trying to accomplish. So I don't ever think that anybody from Europe is going to kind of be a part of this allocation thing. It's going to probably more so be anybody that's on the Western side of the world, basically.
Let me throw you something a little out of the blue here that relates to the NWSL and to women's soccer in general. And it's a bit of a theory that I have, but you've seen FIFA on the men's side really try and promote the Club World Cup to limited success. Why isn't there an equivalent on the women's side? Because to me, there's a lot more potential there for a Women's Club World Cup to try and merge the English League and the Champions League winners in Europe versus the NWSL winner. That would really be intriguing to a lot of people. There'd be a legitimate competition there. Have you ever heard anything like that? What do you think of that idea?
I personally never heard anything like that. I think that would be a fantastic idea. I mean, you talk about how many times these ladies are already playing in international tournaments for their actual nations. I mean, they bring in the She Believes Cup, they bring in the Olympics, World Cup obviously pop up, but it always feels like there's enough international games going on a national level that they almost don't necessarily need to do something club-related like that. But I would be very curious about that. You always hear those comparisons, what if the best NWSL team could play, the Arsenal ladies, or could play, one of the best German clubs, because you see it from an international perspective. But as we know, the NWSL teams are made up of much more diverse squads, or squads of ladies. But I would be completely fine with that. It might be one of those things where, hey, maybe America hosts it this year, and then Europe hosts it this year. I feel like maybe teams from Australia would want to get involved as well, too, but because they play a different season, that would probably be hard for them to do, especially since a lot of those ladies play in NWSL also. But I think something like that would be a lot of fun to see. I've never heard any rumors of something like that happening, but I do agree with you, at least on the men's side, I don't understand why nobody really gets behind that club, that Club World Cup very often. But the concept is a good one, but for some reason, the promotion and the following just has never been there.
Fair enough. That's for a final question, let's turn it to the Olympics. You did mention the U.S. and how you felt they do. Could you just maybe handicap the rest of the field and how you see the women's tournament at Rio playing out?
Well, it's interesting, too. You look at the Olympics, and a lot of folks are going to immediately look back at what the United States has done. They said, hey, this is a team that's won so many gold medals. They're very, very good at it. And the Olympics are different from what you're going to see, at the World Cup, because you only can take 18 players. So in that aspect of it, it does raise a little bit more concern. You're like, okay, well, what are we, you know, what's capable of happening? But you look at what's going on. You look at the teams that are going to be making their way there. The biggest concern is that there's no Japan. And you talk about Japan being such a big catalyst in women's soccer, which, you know, maybe surprises some folks if you haven't been following very closely, but Japan has been a very, very household name for a long time. But the teams that are there, of the 12 teams that are there, the United States are going to make a strong push. France is going to push them very hard as well. I'm assuming it's going to be the United States and France that will get out of Group G. Group F, Canada, and me, I really think, can both make a strong push to get out. But Australia, as we saw at the Women's World Cup, they're capable of making a lot of waves too, so don't fall asleep on Australia in Group F and Group E. Brazil, China, Sweden, South Africa. Brazil is the host nation. They're going to, same on the men's side as well, they're going to be in one of the final games just because of how, you know, anytime you play in front of a home nation, that's just what's going to happen. But the United States as a whole, I think their toughest competition, if they have to go through Germany or if they have to go through Brazil in, you know, one of the final games, is going to be probably the only teams really that are going to match up against them. But, my final four, I don't necessarily know how the seeding is all going to work yet, but I mean, it's probably going to be something like a Brazil, United States, Germany, and then either Canada or Australia probably is going to take that final spot. But still watch for the United States, still watch for Brazil to probably meet either in the finals or very close to that final round.
Looking forward to that tournament almost as much as any other in this summer. A lot of soccer this summer, a lot of soccer that we'll be covering here on Soccer Today. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's just on the horizon too. It was a disappointing season for me in the club side on the in the European season. So I'm looking forward to getting to erasing that a little bit with the summer of international, which I always love the Euros too. So Baxter, we do thank you. We'll have you on again to talk about this closer to the Olympics probably. And hopefully people can check out What's the Score quiz and the two up front podcast. Thanks again.
No problem. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
You are listening to SPN Radio, powered by the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit sportspodcastingnetwork.com for more.
And welcome back. Kevin, what are your thoughts? We did this on our other show, but we might as well continue with the final conversation there a little bit. And just before we do, unfortunately, no phone calls today, but we can take your tweets. You want to tweet it either at Kev Laramie, at SportsPodNet, or at 24th Minute. That's 24th Minute.
You can actually join us on Skype. So if you're on Skype in front of your computer off the woodworks, give us a call as we speak, and you will be right live on the air.
All right. Or you can send the tweets if you want, if you prefer, if you're a little shy, we will answer your questions that way too. But let's continue on with the Olympic conversation. And I'll ask this to the listeners out there. What are your expectations for the Olympic tournament on the women's side? Where do you think Canada and the U.S. are going to finish? How do you think, can Canada replicate what they did back in London? Hell, if you want to call in and complain about the semifinal, I'll be happy to engage you there too as well. But Kevin, I'll start with you. What are your take on the Olympics right now, and what are you looking forward to watching in that tournament?
It's going to be very interesting because, the way it happened in London for the Canadian women's national team was a little bit of a contest of circumstance. My French expression that I like to word for word translate in English, which just makes no sense, but you get what I'm saying. But it's basically a fluke. Not that it's the players weren't deserving of that medal. They were, but it's because of performances of other teams, because of calls here and there, and a certain aspect. They were the third team in their group before going out. So let's face it, they had 1.5 good games in that tournament, but it's when it counted. So all those things need to be replicated or be better for them in Rio. And that's a lot to ask, especially with a tournament that it's going to be even a little bit more difficult because the level of play in women's soccer has grown in the last 4 years with the addition of the NWSL, which is in its fourth year. So look at the timetable with the addition of the European Women's Champions League, which is bigger and more intense and competitive than it ever was. So because of those reasons, the level of play has risen. So when the tide rises, does all the ship rise at the same time? if you're anchored at the bottom, not necessarily. So maybe that's what's going to happen with Canada. I do expect them to face maybe a difficult Olympic tournament, Dwayne.
Well, we talked about this on the Draw on our Five Rings podcast, which is our Olympic show for those of you, if you're just discovering this now, when the draw was made. That is a very, very tough draw for Canada, and particularly what happens once they get out of the group stage. I do think that they have enough to finish third in that group, and third in that group may or may not get through, but certainly they should also be battling for second. So regardless, what I'm saying is I think Canada will find itself in a quarterfinal, but that quarterfinal will be very tough. As Baxter said, I do believe the U.S. should be the wide and huge favorite in this tournament regardless, although I will maintain my little bit of a crush that I have on the French team on how they play, and hope that maybe they one day can get the job done there, because that's an immensely talented group of women that just have never had anything come through for them in the end, and you'd love to see them pay out. You know, we used to have this conversation on the men's side about Spain, and all of a sudden they were bang, 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 three major tournaments in a row. So always time to turn the narrative around, Kevin.
But I want to go back to one thing you mentioned to Baxter, Dwayne, and I think it's a talking point that we will be taking out of this show today, the Women Club World Cup. I think it might be the way to go, because you can, in the men's side of thing, the ideal world, in a utopian world, the world of soccer, you would get a Champions League European one, but it would be global, and it would be the FIFA Club World Cup type of thing. But because of the amount of teams present in the top tier, it's hard to do that globally without having team feel left out, without having team felt like they're left behind and not part of the whole situation. On the women's side, because it's a game that's upcoming and it's becoming global slowly, you have the opportunity now to put the infrastructures, to put the basis of that pyramid of being able to have a streamlined global Champions League or Club World Cup that could be a league in itself, that could be maybe what's needed to capture the attention, because it's been proven in a lot of sports that when the product meets the demand, the word women has not necessarily the most important thing in that phrase, but it's the sport, and the sport itself is worth it. And I think if we have that global league, it would maybe bring the credibility of that sport, which is, yes, now it's fourth year in the NWSL, it's starting to gain a lot of credibility, but it would raise it even a notch above what we have ever seen.
Yeah, and Baxter mentioned the timing with the Australian League playing at a different time. You'd want to get Asia involved in this, obviously, so you'd have to figure that out. But to me, it's just always been logical that this would be where you'd do it. And you'd rotate it. You'd play one in Europe, then you'd play in the U.S. the next time, probably the U.S., maybe Canada might could get there eventually, but they need to develop at least one fully professional club team before I would be willing to go that far. And then you'd go somewhere in Australia or Asia, maybe Japan, after that, and kind of just do a rotation around for those three. And I think that in particular, the years that it's held in the United States, that you could anticipate very big crowds to support that, because the U.S. has often shown that at the elite level, not necessarily at the club level week in, week out, but at the elite level, and if you play that out and put the flag on the club team that's representing the NWSL, I think you'd get a big crowd out there supporting it and sort of wrapping itself in the flag around that. And even if it wouldn't be an entirely American team, it would be an American-based team most likely. So I do think there's a lot of logic to that idea. And I've just never been completely sure, other than FIFA gonna FIFA, why FIFA's never done that, Kevin.
No, exactly. And well, you say FIFA was a FIFA. I think we all know or have heard about politics and opinions of the actual game of people that were in position of power in FIFA before. Now things are apparently changing, and it is for the better. So maybe those attitudes and those my non-forward thinking analogy of rewind thinking has gone away, maybe with the changing of leadership in that organization, hopefully. So maybe there is a place for a global Champions League of women playing and catching people's attention, and then making young women start to play the game and more and finding the next superstar. And maybe the next Messi will be Leah Messi, and that could be awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe one day we won't talk about the next Messi. We'll talk about who the next Abby Wambach is or Christine Sinclair, and sort of keep the male gender out of that when we're talking to a women's player, right? Like that's not to attack you for that, Kevin, but that's something
we instinctively do,
right? It'd be nice if the comparison was once like, who's the next great female player, and we don't even consider the gender. That's maybe the ideal goal that we're trying to get to one place. again, if you want to call in at Off the Woodworks, and that's Woodworks with an X, you can give us a shout there on Skype. Or if you want to tweet at us, it's at Kevlarame, LARAMEE, or at 24th minutes, 24th minute. You can get a hold of us either way like that, or SportsPodNet as well works. Any topic on the women's field or any topic period at this point we'll address. Last thought on women's, and then we'll maybe move into some general MLS conversation for the last half hour or so.
Absolutely. Well, we're live for another 2 minutes, and we have Soccer Today Extra, who's going to be on the network with the rest of our conversation today.
Okay, so we're live for two more minutes if you want to call in there. That's sticking, keep it with the women's side of thing. I did want to mention that it's equally important to take care of the level below the elite level, the club level on the women's side. And I think that's the biggest hole right now. We saw it with the W League disappearing. Hopefully you can get out there if you're a supporter of the women's game and support it at the local level. Here in Ontario, you've got League One Ontario Women. You've got, what's the name of that new league, Kevin? It slipped my mind right now. The one that the Quebec teams wanted in.
The UWS?
Yeah.
But to be fair, as well, last week, the PLSQ and its members of the chairman of the board and its members of the committee gathered in a special group talking about the possibility of a women's division and the feasibility of it and the aspects of it. So it's very positive for the women's game, because we have challenged the PLSQ on the Two Soccer podcast a few times now to at least look at the possibility and the feasibility of doing that division like League One. And it seems like that option has caught people's attention, because it's in the works. What's the timeline? We don't know. We were not at the tables at the meeting, but the meeting took place and it's already positive. Exactly. All right. So thanks for listening to the live version of Soccer Today. You can join us on Twitter at Kevlarame at 24th minute for Dwayne. And you can go to the sportspodcastingnetwork.com to listen to the rest of this conversation. Soccer Today goes on extra time today, and the extra time is available exclusively on the sportspodcastingnetwork.com.
All right. So we're just going to keep going live, Kevin?
Absolutely.
All right, then we'll keep going live. This is an extra time radio. This is, reminds me of the old ICF days when Rycroft would let the mic hot after the show was over. We'd always get a little looser and have a little more fun conversations. Almost got ourselves sued a couple times. So let's not
you
do that.
To SPN Radio. Exactly.
Okay. A couple things on there. There was a question that did come in right at the end at MLS that was talking about what they thought of his big noof. Tim was asking me whether, and I know Tim, so Tim Drudge, he's a big noof to many people. He was asking us whether we thought Toronto FC might do in the window, whether they might add another player. Kevin, I'll field this one unless you have a thought. You can jump in when I'm done. But I don't think they will, Tim, simply because if you look at the roster composition right now in terms of salary cap, that it's going to be difficult to add without subtracting. And I don't necessarily look at that lineup and the success they're having regular or so early on in the season, whether you want to take a piece out right now, whether you want to screw with that chemistry just to add something. Now, clearly the depth issue up front is the most concerning thing, but I think that it's worth belaboring that when you objectively take a step back, and there was an article by John Molineros today that sort of addressed this, and look at how many games these players are really going to miss in MLS when they're away for international duty this year. It's not that many. In Javinko's case, Greg Vanney was on record today to say that he probably won't be he'll probably be here until the May 28th game with New York and then gone after that. MLS takes the two-week break when the group stage of Copa Americas is going on. TFC will be playing the Voyagers Cup during that time, and it's unfortunate that those players will miss those games. But outside of that, in terms of a league competition, it is entirely possible that we may only have one game in which they are missing the three big players, the three DPs. So that's not really that dangerous, and I don't know whether you want to tip the whole apple cart over and potentially mess with the chemistry just for that one game, Kevin.
Not just that, too. If you consider that Italy might not necessarily go deep, depends. It's an aging team and with injuries to their best players as we speak. So for that reason, maybe the group stage is all it's going to be, so won't be that long. And it's like Belgium. It's like the Laurent Simard. Because of the Victor Company injury last week and the fact that he declared on his Facebook page that he's not going to be part of the Euros for the Impact, there's a worry that Laurent Simard will be gone for 2 months. But pragmatically, it would only be between 6 and 8 games if he's gone for the whole 2 months. And we all know that it's not the case. Some players that are in teams do get a couple of leeways to come to join the team at a perfect convenient time for both the national team preparation and the actual club that he's leaving for the Euro. So now there's those aspects of it too that need to be taken into consideration, that it could be not even a handful of games. And if he goes to the Euros, it might be a benefit for Laurent Simard because he might not be playing 90 minutes over there. So it's kind of like his break in the middle of the season to recharge and experience something beautiful. We'll see. But yeah, I'm not that worried because, well, it's not even sure that he's going to be part of the club to start with.
Yeah, well, Vincent Kompany announcing that he won't be over there, and speaking as a Manchester City fan, I say thank God. But this is a man made of glass at this particular point in his career, and he needs to take care of his health. So it's the right decision for Kompany, I think. But it's a big blow for Belgium, who might have been one of the favorites going into this otherwise. And this is a nation that really has never won a major title, so it would have been nice to see them go deep in that tournament. But I do think that probably means it's more likely that Simard will get a call. Is that what you're hearing in Montreal, that you're expecting that he's going to get that call up now?
I still consider it 40%, but it's a number I'm taking literally out of my you-know-where. But looking at choices of the coach of Belgian national team over the last year, it's been more than a year the last time he was called up, and he wasn't called up for the finding that's going to happen in the next few days for Belgium. So all things pointing towards, I'm still not sure he's going to get picked, but you never know. He used to be included in the 23-man usually for those type of rosters. Maybe he's in that 18 to 23 type of position. So it'll be interesting. But it'll be interesting to see, too, if the fact that he's playing in Major League Soccer for the last year now would have affected his ranking or his appreciation by the selector of the Belgian national team. So those are the questions that are going to determine if he gets selected or not. Right now, I still have a feeling like Laurent Simard is not going to, unfortunately for Belgium and for his fans, but fortunately for the Impact roster and the fans, I believe he's going to stay in Montreal this summer.
Yeah, here's a question for maybe next week. Is if these two players are both called up, or even we can just speculate that they will be in terms of Laurent Simard and Sebastian Giovinco, which one would be missed more? And like, the obvious answer might be to some Giovinco, but I don't know. Simard plays such an important position with the Impact. I wonder that which one would actually be more of a hole for the respective team in Canada if they were gone for the Euros. Do you think it'd be Simard, or do you think it's Giovinco because he's been involved in literally every goal Toronto has scored this year?
True, but it's almost a question of philosophy. Which is more important, defender of the year or the MVP of the year? That's the question, right? And that's what you have. So it's interesting. No, Laurent Simard is like the heart and soul of the backline, but we have seen over the last few weeks, not necessarily going that well, Montreal. So I don't know. Maybe Giovinco right now would be the more missed player, but no. Laurent Simard is the heart and soul, is the character of that defense, and you definitely need him, if not just to stop everything, to make sure that his compatriots at the defense do stop everything, otherwise he's going to yell at them. So no, the fear factor of Laurent Simard is important for this team.
Yeah, I think from a Toronto perspective, in many ways, I'm less worried about missing Giovinco for 1 or 2 games. I think it'll make a good opportunity for those other attacking players to be forced into a role. And if they drop some points, they drop some points. And I would like to see Endo sort of have more, you know, more opportunity to go forward. I'd like to see yes, Moba Bully get a little more time out there from the start.
Has been met once. Check that.
Quota's been met. I love how people tweet at me when he gets subbed on now. Anyway.
It's like the Premier League, right? It's like the Canadian Premier League. It's your baby now. You're stuck with it.
When my phone will blow up when Moba Bully scores his first MLS goal, you just watch. And he will score his first MLS goal.
You know what's going to happen. He's going to score in the MLS Canadian Championship. That's what's going to happen.
Well, that's interesting too. And with all those players gone, and this is kind of, it's it's been the decision's been made for TFC that they're going to go with a young lineup in that because of the international call-ups, right? Like you're going to they're going to be gone. Those are the two games that you can't whitewash. There's not going to be a lot of players there that are any of TFC's international players there other than Will Johnson are not going to Cerio. Is Cerio an international player right now? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Eh? It's kind of on the fence, right? He's on the cusp.
Yes, exactly. So they won't be there for those two games. So it's going to be a Canadian heavy lineup and a young lineup. And I'm okay with that. Those players are going to go out and compete to win that championship as hard as they can. And I think that Montreal, well, you tell me, I suspect Montreal is going to play a lot of their younger players and do a bit of a rotation there. And, you know, Kyle Becker might be trying to win the Amway Canadian Championship for the impact against Toronto too, right?
Yeah. To be fair, he did have about 45 minutes to play last week. Of the morning, but no, of course, but the rule change of this year, the academy players being available for the Voyagers Cup makes it a little different because it makes it almost okay for them and not necessarily as frowned upon as years before to have their young players play in that competition because it can mean more to them. And when you're in a position where Montreal is, where you're in a good position in the standings, even though it hasn't been the amount of success over the last month that you wanted. It's been a month with no, well, 3 weeks with no, a month now with no victories, and you want to get back on that side of thing. But your standing is very good. You're still top of the East until tonight. Who knows if tonight Philly wins, Philly takes over the East where they're playing LA at home. Well, and in Philly, I mean. So that's going to be interesting. But for Montreal, if they want to continue to keep their spot in the standings, they have to focus on the MLS, especially with the injuries they had over the last few weeks. So, that being said, the Voyagers Cup might be not an afterthought because that would be dismissive of the competition, but it's not the priority. So, I do expect Montreal to use more young players in that competition this year because not that they don't want to win it and don't want to go to the CONCACAF Champions League, but it's so far away that the urgency of winning that competition to get that golden ticket, well, it's not there because it's like 18 months between the winning of the ticket and you can use it. So, yeah, because of that, I don't think it's a priority for Montreal. And I think they're going to focus on MLS this year.
Yeah, a very large midweek schedule this week, folks, by the way. Maybe let's just go through those games right now, Kevin. You've got Philly at the Galaxy, which is a fascinating matchup, as you just said, in terms of whether the Union are for real. And this could be a major test for them.
Are they Leicester or Aston Villa? Tonight we're going to know.
Exactly. You got the FC Dallas at Portland, which is another interesting lineup as well. Colorado at SKC. That's fascinating. Like all three of these games have a lot of intrigue, and I kind of wish I could watch both of them. I guess I could split screen. I don't like split screening games, so it's hard to focus on both.
Well, you get like if you split screen, you get what 25% of both of those games instead of 100% of one.
Exactly. So I may have to make my choice there. And I might lean towards Colorado Sporting Kansas City because I saw Dallas recently and I've seen Portland recently. So it'd be interesting to see those two teams and see what the hell's going on with Colorado. The Whitecaps.
What's going on with Kansas City, Dwayne, too? We have Peter Vermees challenging his players this week saying, look, we'll come out strong this Wednesday. Otherwise, it's not going to go well for you. So it will be interesting because what we talked about earlier this year, even though it's not going that well now in Swope Park Rangers territory after a great beginning of the season for Mark Dos Santos and his boys in the USL, he still has Mark Dos Santos breathing down the neck of Peter Vermees. So if anything happens in Kansas City, there's a very competent coach waiting in the back. And he's not there for just show and just coaching the USL. Trust me, the guy has ambition. So if anything happened to Peter Vermees at Kansas City, if you challenge your team and they don't come out and show you for it, well, maybe you're in trouble after. It's kind of like the kiss of death. So we'll see what happens in Kansas City. But Peter Vermees is well aware because he's a technical director as well. He's the guy who hired Mark Dos Santos. He knows that breathing down his neck, there's a very competent coach that might be licking his chops at the opportunity of coaching a Major League Soccer team. So if anything happens in Kansas City and the showing is not there tonight, I'm not saying he's going to get fired anytime soon, but the wheels will be in motion.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't heard you mention who your preseason MLS Cup pick was in a couple weeks, Kevin.
I did support the Kansas City. I did mention it in my MLS post-game show last week where I was saying, I still stand by it because it's an ebb and flow type of season and it's not where you are in May. It's where you are in September.
Exactly. So fascinating game there. The two later games, the Whitecaps here in Canada. Okay. they're playing the Chicago Fire, Kevin. If the Whitecaps do not beat the Chicago Fire this year, then come on, guys.
Wayne, what's the logic we had this year so far with Vancouver and predictions?
When it doesn't make sense, it's what's going to happen.
So what's going to happen tonight?
Bad heavy on the fire. There you go. There's my wager pick of the my surefire. You know, one of those old call in lines where you'd have the guy would give you their surefire pick of the day. That's our Too Salt to the Soccer Today surefire pick of the day. Chicago Fire will beat the Whitecaps because it makes no sense.
that makes sense.
And the last game of the day involves the last place team in the league, Houston Dynamo, who they started pretty good the first couple weeks and have just gone off a cliff. And Coyle's got to be in trouble with they're playing San Jose, by the way. But
the Quakes.
Yeah, the Quakes and the Dynamo. It's
the original and the latter, the former Quakes.
Yes, it's the Earthquakes Derby. Yep. Or the Clash Derby, I guess, if you want to go that far.
I would call it the Richter Scale Derby.
There you go, the Richter Scale Derby. Let's talk about Jason Greiss. Where do you think he's going to end? There's two topics. Let's talk about Jason Greiss first, and then talk about Kai Kamara after, because I think those are two intriguing things right now in the world of MLS, and then we'll maybe look to wrap up in about 10 more minutes. But let's start with Greiss. Surely one of these teams is going to roll the dice soon, and I'm curious where you think that that team that's going to look at him, you know, wasting time at MLSsoccer.com and say, you know what, we need to make a change. We need to jump start our season here. Where do you think that will happen, Kevin?
If you would ask me that question 2 weeks ago, I would have said Seattle. But there was a big victory for them last week at home, a shutout. So, and that was impressive and maybe got things back in the right track maybe for Seattle. But the perception of Siggy Schmidt maybe lost, not the locker room, but lost his ways, because it's been a while since the Seattle Sounders have met the expectation of their 60,000 fans. But that being said, they won a game and will maybe give Siggy Schmidt more time. If you would ask me that question in the offseason, I would have said, well, LA, because Bruce Arena, we're not sure, we're not convinced with the transfers over the last few weeks and even a couple of weeks in the season, Dwayne. Remember, Gerard wasn't firing correctly. Joe DeSanto still not involved, except that cracker of a goal that he did score last week, which was really impressive. But the Keane is back. So now the LA is really probably the best team in the league as we speak. So I don't know. Jason Greiss might not even know right now where an opportunity is going to come from. But if you're Jason Greiss, you're going to have the luxury of choosing where you're going. So what's the point of going to a Chicago? Sorry, Chicago, we're bashing on you a lot today. But the Chicago Firecrackers, because they're not really firing a lot this time. Like many years.
Ever.
Last
10 years,
Exactly. I remember 4 years ago making memes about the Fires. So, yeah, exactly. But what's the point of going to a Fire team if you don't have all the powers and money to bring in players that you want? So Jason Greiss will have the luxury of choosing where he wants to go. And that's interesting because I don't know if NYCFC is going to keep on almost testing facility as they do have with Vieira as a coach now going forward. Maybe he's not going to go back there for sure, but there's going to be opportunities coming from the future, and I can't seem to see one team that's going to be the front runners, because they need to have something to attract Jason Greiss. He almost has the leverage in that negotiation.
Yeah, look, I would say that you're right. You're absolutely bang on there, because the two obvious choices are DC United and the New England Revolution. Both those teams are struggling. But then you look at the resources behind both, and you look at how those front offices are being criticized on so many different levels right now. Like, DC United is imploding right now. They're battling with their own supporters. They have no one in that stadium. They're still trying to get, you know, approval of that stadium so they can move on. I think that's their Hail Mary.
Like, that's going to happen. I heard that one before, Dwayne.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's their Hail Mary at this point, that stadium's going to solve everything. And sometimes I think people get caught in that dangerous cycle where they think that that's going to solve everything, and it doesn't necessarily always do.
I remember a Claude Brochu saying that in Montreal around between 2000 and 2004, saying, oh, a new stadium is going to fix everything. A new stadium downtown will bring everybody back to the stadium. It will bring the fun back. Guess what happened? Washington is the one that benefited from that move. So we'll see what happens with our Washington this time.
Yeah. The Nationals, man. I still can't. I used to be an Expos fan, too. I used to split my allegiances, but I can't cheer for the Nationals. I don't know what
I hate the Nationals, even though I never watched them. Bryce Harper, you could have been awesome.
It could have been. He's back to MLS, though. In New England, I mean, it's, you know, they're not going to, they're basically, they got into a, you know, scary match with the one expenditure they ever did make with Jermaine Jones and then let him go. And now he's ripping the league up for Colorado. So there's not a lot of evidence there. Houston's an interesting, is Owen Coyle going to walk away that quickly? Are they going to give up that experiment? And, you know, there's one that a lot of people are rubbing their hands together right now and going, we told you so a year and a half or so later. That might be an option there too. But I do think that if you're Jason Christ, you might look at the situation in Seattle and you might look at the situation in LA and with Arena and Ziggy both maybe in their final years for different reasons. If Seattle doesn't win a championship this year, I do think that they'll move on from Schmidt. LA, Bruce Arena might just move on his own. He might retire at the end of this year. Play with his grandkids or something, but that might be the options that Christ is looking at.
Sorry to interrupt, Dwayne, but for Bruce Arena, I just had a flash. You know what? One of the things Bruce Arena has been known for, to start a new team and to start a new program. And if you're like him, a place like Atlanta might be seem fitting, where you have a team and an owner, Mr. Blank, that comes in the league with a lot of money and wants to fill a void that's there and create something special with the look of the stadium and all that. So maybe Atlanta United could be a viable option for a Bruce Arena or a Ziggy Schmidt per se, a coach with a lot of experience that would appreciate the climate. Of course, if you're in LA, it's the same or hotter and less fun. But if you're from Seattle, hey, Atlanta could look like an interesting option if you're Ziggy Schmidt for next year.
Or he could take a year off, play at the beach with his grandkids, and then come back and coach LAFC.
True, exactly. Why not?
Yeah, that might be the other option there, too. And we need to get Alicia back on to talk about LAFC too, again sometime, too. Maybe we could look to do that next week sometime, because there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. The other topic I wanted to talk about was the Kai Kamara stuff, and this is just getting better, Kevin. It's just getting – it's like a soap opera down there in CBUS right now. He's getting suspended for
by
a game.
Club.
He's telling
by the club because he opened his mouth. Yeah. He's getting suspended because he broke the omerta, basically.
Yeah, well, and today, this morning, he tweets out, just before we went on air, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this, Kevin, he tweets out, takes 10 minutes to organize your thoughts, 2 seconds to delete it, and he tweets that out, i.e. that he was about to tweet something bad and then decided against it, but didn't want to completely decide against it, so he's implying it. So this
he's
is what Kai Kamara is doing.
Thoughts.
Yeah, he's subtweeting himself, basically, at this point in time, so that's kind of funny. Does he last the month? I mean, it's going to be so – we talked about this on the regular show. How do you move him, but how do you not move him at this particular time if this continues?
Yeah, one of the best players in the league over the last 18 months. How do you move him? Because if you read between the lines, with the club suspending him and Ali Higuain, it kind of gives a side that they're choosing. So they kind of feel like if you suspend Kamara, maybe he's the one that's going to get moved on. And if he doesn't, what does it say about the coach? What does it say about the situation with the new owner that's been there for not even 2 years? How does he handle the situation? So it's become really intriguing where all the dominoes are going to fall now, because it's in motion for sure. Talks have been made about how to deal with this situation. And when you're looking at a club with a disagreement between two DPs, it's hard now because people know that they want to get rid of Kamara. So the one thing that Major League Soccer never wants to happen is raise of the like negotiation and battle to raise the stakes and raise the price. Now it's going to be the exact opposite effect. Nobody is going to want to give a lot for him because they know they want to get rid of him. So that's the other intriguing, that the technical director for Columbus won't have the leverage in that negotiation. He might have to bite the bullet and not necessarily sell him at a loss, but settle for something that is probably not even close to what Kamara is actually worth.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I'll tell you exactly what team should be on the phone right now. The Vancouver Whitecaps.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, they've never had that dominant scorer up top. And he kind of fits their philosophy, too, in the fact that he's not a huge name, but he is an MLS established name that's shown that he could score in this league. I think that if I were the Whitecaps, I'd be trying to make something happen there. They do have some defensive depth, too, that they can maybe spin over to Columbus. Columbus has never been particularly strong at the back. There's another player, Tony Chaney's not really playing for the Columbus right now either, and he was a key player for their Eastern Championship team last year. So that's another other name that's on the Columbus trade block right now, probably. So there could be some action in Columbus.
right there. And let's finish the show with thoughts specific to the teams that we follow closely. Tim did ask whether I thought Toronto would make a major move in the window. I sort of indicated no. So let me ask you the same about Montreal, Kevin, and what your thoughts are on their moves in the summer or potential moves in the summer.
I don't expect a significant name. So I don't necessarily expect a name that we will know if it's a name that's coming outside the league. I might expect, though, maybe not necessarily a trade, but we have seen lately what's been really producing with Montreal is bringing players that do have an MLS experience. If you're looking at a Dominic Adjaro, this year has been maybe the unsung hero. Maybe unsung doesn't quite cut it because he has been scoring goals and assists. So for him, Adjaro this year, he really has brought a worth to Montreal. Yes, it's when he's playing against his former team and he has something special. So when he's played Columbus, which Montreal played already twice this year, and in Toronto, you do have that special, in Chicago, by the way. But no, an American or MLSer or MLS lifer, is like we like to call him here, might be what Montreal needs to be able to help that depth. We've seen Alec Alexander, when not injured or not bothered by a back spasm and injuries, has been really helpful and reliable with Montreal, especially with Donadel. Same thing when he's not injured. So those type of players is what is needed going forward. And the Montreal Impact has a good amount of midfielders if they're all healthy. And that's what really hindered them this season so far. Because of injuries, they weren't able to do the squad rotation as much as they would love. But they do have that depth. What they do need is maybe another striker option, because Adjaro has been thriving on the right midfield position. And until Andres Romero comes back this summer, if he does, we haven't heard from him in a while. He's in rehabbing his knee since the last year, late in the season injury that actually ended the season operation. And he was said to be out for between 12 to 18 months. So the timetable would be around June, July, but we're getting closer to it and we haven't heard from it. So he's still in rehab process. But if he doesn't come back, Adjaro will stay on the right midfield position. So you might need another option at the striker position, because Cameron Porter has been injured, because Salazar has been actually doing good with the small samples we've seen him. But we need maybe an established striker to help mold the team when Drogba won't be playing, because we're not going to lie, he played a lot over the last five games. Is it going to continue for the rest of the season? I doubt it, because you want to keep him fresh when it matters for the playoffs. So you need maybe another striker option for Montreal.
Yeah, I wonder with Drogba, final question, and then we will say goodbye for the day. Do you think you anticipate they might like actually shut him completely down for a couple weeks in the summer? They may, like, because you have that the 2 week rest there when the two Voyagers Cup games are going on, just like tell him to rest for a couple weeks. Do you anticipate handling him something like that?
Maybe skip one or two travel, maybe one or two long, far away games if they're going to play, especially on turf, which he's not going to play those for sure. But if they're going like a far travel and it's against a mid-table team, bottom table team, and Montreal has a big advance in the standings, I won't expect him to play. But I didn't expect him to start all the last five games either, and he did. And he did play 90 minutes. I think he was maybe testing himself, maybe trying to prove, because sometimes you actually need game to become game shape. So the more minutes you do get consistently in the team consecutively, especially when you're playing games from Saturday to Wednesday to Saturday, you do get that rhythm and you test yourself and you exert yourself to a level that you actually help your condition after that stint. So maybe that's the reason he started all those games. But yeah, his time playing management will be key, because you don't want him to fade at the worst possible time like he did last year in that away game against Columbus.
All right.
It was due to a little injuries, yes, but it was due to a lot of playing time and not necessarily the best training camp for him that time. So, yeah.
All right. On that note, let's call it a day. Apologies for the later start today. Technical issues. We're working stuff out. That's why we're doing this as a pilot edition right now. But I think we figured out how we have to fix it. I haven't fixed it yet. But anyway.
No, but Dwayne, the biggest difference, if you can hear, usually on Blog Talk Radio, like the show we did last week, you have phone quality. This week, you have high fidelity, better than radio live in your ear, wherever you are or were. So we got that for you today going.
All right, fair enough. And let us know whether you liked the extra time portion of this. I can't guarantee that we do something like that every show, but if you like having a bit of a bonus for the podcasting, you know, maybe we could look to do that occasionally as well, so that the podcast-only listeners or gives you a reason to come download the podcast too. So there's bonus for us. But let us know if you like that. Otherwise, obviously, we'll be back probably next week. Well, we will be back next Wednesday, and we'll be back for sure on Two Solitudes, Two S Extra. on Mondays and Fridays as well. So you're essentially getting three soccer shows a week from us right now.
Absolutely, Dwayne. And until next time, have a great soccer week.
I made my game.